The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTates.com studios.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Lot in store. Bob Brenly's going to join us live in Pittsburgh here in a couple of minutes. Always good to catch up with BB right in the middle of the storm. The Pirates, what a great story. Paula Bovin, news and notes. Her weekend in Dallas with Arizona State football. And, of course, we had the Cardinals game yesterday. My Cardinals are 3-2. If I would have told you at the start of the year that the Cardinals would be 3-2 coming into the 49ers and Seahawks games that they will have in a span of 2 weeks from now, we're going to know a lot more about the Cardinals. Actually, I don't know, 11 days from now. Because next Sunday they play at San Francisco, and then 4 days later they have Seattle here. And Seattle here is a lot better than Seattle up there. And yeah, it wasn't pretty yesterday, and there's a lot of people today that are getting notes, and even last night, saying it's time to put Drew Stanton in at quarterback. I'll share with you my thoughts on Carson Palmer and that straight ahead on the show. Our Facebook question of the day, Eric is off today. He was down in Dallas, and Jared Cohen in his stead. Did you work on this question, or did Eric give this to you?
No, this is me.
This is all you. It's your fault then. All right, fire away. What do you have?
The Facebook question for today, as you mentioned, the Cardinals are 3-2. They're a game out of first place in the NFC West, but they have the meat of the schedule coming up with San Francisco, Seattle, and Atlanta. So give us the over-under one win for the Cardinals over the next three before they hit the bye week.
Okay, so the next 3 weeks, how many games are they going to win?
That's yes.
Over one or under one?
Yes. I was going to make it 1.5.
Yeah.
But...
That would look. We're all we want to know. We're guys, okay? We see a cow, we shoot it, we eat it, we move on. We seek and destroy. Let's not sit here and complicate the issue. 1.5, you're gonna have guys' heads exploding.
Exactly.
On
are they gonna? Right? Well, yeah. So I just made it a simple one. Are they gonna win a game?
Yeah.
Or are they gonna win more than one game? That's basically to.
I would say they're going to win two of the next three.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it's funny how when you have stretches like this early in the season, Colin Kaepernick wasn't very good at all yesterday.
He had six completions or something like that,
Matt
right?
Matt Schaub was awful.
He was terrible.
Just awful. All right, so head on over to our Facebook question. There you go. After 5 weeks, Cardinals 3-2, game out of first in the NFC West. Now the meat of their schedule, San Francisco,
so
Seattle,
what's
Atlanta.
What's the two they're going to win?
I would say San Francisco and Atlanta.
You know, they haven't beaten San Francisco since the Super Bowl year there.
You know, it's going to happen. Things change. I'm willing to throw it out there. What's there to lose, right? Let's get you caught up some of the things on my mind in the world of sports. It's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. The Honda Resort and Casino, we're off to another week, and tonight there's Monday Night Football. Pull down the slot, eat some food, have some fun, watch the game. It's the Jets and Falcons tonight. And during the week, of course, they have the biggest, baddest brown fishing tournament. It's going on, actually, not just the week. It's just going on. Right now at the Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top, that is the place for all the food and fun and festivities. A great place to stay, the Honda Resort and Casino. The Cardinals' win yesterday was very impressive defensively. I'm a big Carlos Dansby guy. I was big on when they brought Carlos Dansby back. There's just something I like about Carlos Dansby. You go stand in front of Carlos Dansby's locker and you're interviewing him and he's making some protein concoction shake. And he's not even looking up at you and he's answering questions. I'm fine with that. And then he'll get up and he's just a very good football player. He's a very good locker room guy. John Abraham and Carlos Dansby to me. And it's not always going to show up in the stat sheet. It seems to me that there were some guys last season, yeah, injuries were part of it, but there just wasn't the leadership on that side of the football. It used to be Adrian Wilson's defense, and his star had faded, and the organization was trying to figure out how to move on. So the last few years, it wasn't that pleasant. It was Darnell Dockett's defense. It was Calais Campbell having a big year, and then last year he tailed off, and this year, quite frankly, he hadn't been that dominant of a player. And everybody looks better and smarter when Darrell Washington suddenly walks out. Well, I don't know. Last time I checked, he was a Pro Bowl player. So the defense of the Cardinals was terrific yesterday. Was just terrific. And Cam Newton was awful. I can't say that it was completely the Cardinals that had Cam Newton figured out. Cam Newton's just been one of these big disappointments. I'm not going to throw him in the Jamarcus Russell category as of yet, top pick that can't play, but gosh almighty, you look at Carolina and say, they got to be better than that. But the Cardinals were able to get through it And in the second half, first half was, you know, Carson Palmer wasn't impressive. Carson Palmer wasn't very good. Carson Palmer, for those of you that want to throw him out with the bathwater today, Carson Palmer is better than Derek Anderson. He's better than Max Hall. He's better than John Skelton. They're better there. They're not where they're going to need to be big-time winners, in my opinion. He made just enough plays like last week in Tampa Bay for them to win the game. Here's Bruce Arians after the game on the offense in the second half, not the first half, second half against the Panthers.
And I thought defensively went out and dominated the second half, but offensively I thought we played good football. As a team, it might have been our best 30 minutes in a long time. And those are the type of games we're going to need to keep putting together. You can call them ugly wins or any kind of wins you want. As long as they're wins, I love them.
That's right. They're 3-2. 3-2. So if you're one of these guys walking around today saying, man, they're bad, I'm walking around saying they're not very good in certain areas, but they've given themselves a chance here at this crucial juncture of the season. I think most anybody who did that stuff off the top of the season, where you look at the schedule and it comes out and says, well, that's a W and that's an L and that's an L and that's a W and that's an L. The fact that they've been able to string together two wins at home, they got blitzed by New Orleans. Last time I checked, everybody's getting blitzed by New Orleans. The St. Louis game was disappointing because they had chances to win the game. Detroit, they did what they're supposed to do. Detroit's banged up, beat up. They knock Reggie Bush out. So, look, I'm not going to apologize for sitting here at 3-2. Are there issues that have got to be corrected? Absolutely. Carson Palmer's interceptions are the biggest one right now to me. You've got to have more consistent play out of your quarterback. He can't be as bad as he was yesterday in the first half or in the red zone.
We had some really good field position opportunities and went 3-and-out, I think, twice on them. And a couple others where we just didn't capitalize on them. So just got to continue to work, continue to get better, and got a big one this week going into San Francisco, a big divisional game. So we expect our defense to play well next week, but, offensively we have to play much better.
Yeah, I'd rather have Carson Palmer quarterback than Drew Stanton, for those of you that want to make a change at quarterback. Bruce Arians was not pleased on Palmer's interceptions.
You try to force it to Larry, you're going to have problems. Especially when he's double covered, you got to fit it in such a tight hole. Keckley read his eyes on the last one, and the first one, the flea flicker, Michael Floyd cannot allow that interception. I don't care. When we throw a ball up for you as a jump ball, and it's one-on-one, it damn sure better not be intercepted.
So Bruce Arians has them at 3-2 with San Francisco. I watched the Niners last night. Matt Schaub was awful. Colin Kaepernick didn't do anything special. It looks to me like they're trying to do some different things with Colin Kaepernick with the zone read. Yeah, they were able to run the ball with Frank Gore, but we said at the start of the year, he doesn't have the receivers that he thought he was going to have at the start of the season. I'm not going to give it all about San Francisco and say, man, were they impressive against Houston? No, Houston was just that bad. And Houston's defense held them to 284 yards total offense. Houston has a very good defense. I think Houston has a Super Bowl caliber defense. Their offense is severely lacking at quarterback. You have Andre Johnson, Arian Foster, and Ben Tate. You should be able to do more than what they did last night. So the Cardinals are going to San Francisco. As Jared pointed out, Cardinals don't win up there. They haven't won up there in several years. I'm fine with that. That was in a previous administration, previous group. I think the 49ers don't look as... let me put it this way. They look vulnerable to me. Now, next Monday when I'm sitting here and the final score is 38-0 San Francisco, you can just run me over. But just look at the NFC West, guys. We've said Seattle is a team that can go to the Super Bowl if they have all their games at home. Seattle, the last 2 weeks, they should have lost down in Houston, but Matt Schaub threw a pick six, had a brain fart. Yesterday, Indianapolis at home was able to beat Seattle. I think when you get Seattle away from their dome, away from their field, I should say, that they are a team that it plays much different. And so they're going to be here, and next week at this time, we'll talk about the 49er game, but just almost instantaneously shift right into the Seahawks because it's just 3 days later. Terrific weekend of football. I was riveted all weekend long. The ASU game, so Richard Smith has got to be on my sideline standing next to me holding the clipboard. I understand that he has talent, and it's very seldom that I get on the show and just say, I can't have this kid on the field when they're collegiate guys. Sometimes you just have to crush them. Like Vontaze was just on and on and on because of all the nonsense off the field. People are like, oh, yeah, look at him in the NFL. Yeah, he also destroyed the program here. It was a big setback. Richard Smith, I've been hearing about this receiver that needs to move forward. Think of it from this perspective. Jalen Strong at wide receiver for ASU. He's good for 7 or 8 catches a game. He's averaging that this season. Chris Coyle at tight end is usually good. Last year was very good for 6-7 catches a game. This year, his production has been cut almost in half. They tried to find him down the seam a couple of times. But nonetheless, I got to put him down for 4 to 5 catches a game. So Strong at 7, Coyle at 5. Now I'm at 12, Foster probably 4 or 5 catches. Now I'm at 17. Grice, 4 or 5 catches. Now I'm at 22. I need to be probably at about 30 to win games consistently at quarterback. And as I look at what they've done with the other receivers to bring them along, there's nobody consistently. You can say, well, this guy's going to be great. There hasn't been any consistency. And so Taylor Kelly made some poor decisions. Poor decisions are going to happen with college kids. Notre Dame's defense played pretty darn well, too. The offensive line for ASU was a concern against Stanford. It was a concern again. They didn't play poorly like they did at Stanford. They didn't get caught up in the hot lights like they did at Stanford. But man, oh man, did they have opportunities to win that game. 13 points of offense through 3 quarters, and then Taylor gets sacked 5 times, and Prince Shimbo has 3 of them. Here's Todd Graham. Eric was down there in Dallas. Todd Graham can't make mistakes offensively and expect to beat good teams.
And we moved the ball and did some nice things. Those turnovers were critical. And obviously the interception for touchdown at the end didn't help any. So there's, 14 points off 2 plays.
Todd Graham, Notre Dame, just made more plays than ASU did on Saturday night.
A lot of what-ifs in games. Today they were the better team, and I thought they won the battle up front, especially their defensive line, and we were just very inconsistent, But again, they're a good team. Yeah, we got a good team. You put 2 teams like that out there playing in that kind of environment, it's a team that makes the least amount of mistakes wins, and that was the difference.
So they're unranked. They're still 1-0 in the conference. They have the ultimate trap game this Saturday. Don't roll your eyes on this. It's a fact. You're dealing with 17 or 18, 19, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, and you're going to come across a time in your schedule, and I see it every year, whether it's college basketball or college football, where there's a game that you should just win with ease, and it ends up being a bit of a struggle or more of a struggle than it should. Good teams put bad teams like Colorado away early. And so if they're sitting there dinking around at 10-3 at the end of the first quarter or 10-3 at halftime, something like that, I'm not going to be happy. It's Colorado. It's here. The stadium's not going to be full. If they would have beat Notre Dame Stadium, I think they'd have a much better attendance. These are games you've got to take care of because the following week, you can't tell me that those kids weren't watching Washington give Stanford everything that they wanted late Saturday night. Washington's impressive. Right now in the Pac-12's better than the Southeastern Conference. And if you guys from the South haven't gotten that yet this year, look at the depth. I don't think that Stanford and Oregon are going to make it through unscathed. I think along the way, they're going to end up losing a game somewhere at some point.
I think if Oregon can make it to the title game, I think they're going to win.
Oregon?
If Oregon gets to the national championship think they're going to win.
I do too, Jared. If you look at how they've just methodically gone out and done what they're supposed to do. Now, they haven't been pushed yet. When they have Stanford, I think it's November 7th, they have the Stanford-Oregon game.
Yeah, look
Oregon-Washington this week. Game day's going
to
be up there.
Look what Oregon did to Tennessee and what Georgia had to do to beat Tennessee at home.
That's right. It was a struggle. All right, on the other side, Bob Brenly is going to join us from Pittsburgh. Keep the show moving on to the baseball playoffs for a couple of minutes. We'll talk with BB. I think the best story of postseason baseball, if you've not seen the Pirates and the Jolly Roger being raised, and that city, because the Steelers are awful, and BB's there doing the games for TBS. Bob Brenly joins me next. Some baseball talk. Paula Bovin at the bottom of the hour. I'm Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to today's Pros to Preps question of the day at facebook.com/Pros to Preps.
Good Monday, Brad Sussmat with you. Pros to Preps. Spotlight for a couple of minutes on the baseball playoffs, which have been terrific last night. You could hear it in Bob Brenly's voice, trying to talk over the tops of all the Pirates fans going absolutely crazy. It's got to be a perfect storm in Pittsburgh. The Steelers aren't very good, and the Pirates are raising the Jolly Roger. Bob Brenly, postseason, TBS, TNT. He is with us from Pittsburgh. What is the environment like there? Can you even paint a picture, Bob?
Well, it's kind of hard to if you've never been to Pittsburgh. First of all, this city has really gone through a rebirth, and the ballpark and Heinz Field next door have been a big part of it. And because the Pirates haven't been in the playoffs for 20 years, the fans have really latched on to this year's team. I mean, there's gold and black everywhere you look in the downtown area. There's probably a couple thousand people right now on the Roberto Clemente Bridge as I'm looking out over the field, just waiting to get into the stadium. Both teams are down on the field right now taking batting practice. It's just, you can feel the energy in the air, the electricity. It's everything you expect from postseason baseball.
The Pedro Alvarez at bat Sunday night, what was going through your mind? Here's a guy that hits a .180 against left-handers.
Yeah, it's tough to figure. And Kevin Seacrest on the mound for the Cardinals had held lefties to a .118 batting average during the season. That's just one of those things you can't explain. You can't fault Mike Matheny for bringing in the lefty to face Alvarez. The numbers said that was absolutely the right move to make. I think it just points out the random nature of the game of baseball. You can make all the right moves. You can put the right guys in the right spot where statistically everything tells you that this is the matchup you want, and it doesn't always work out the way you hoped. It doesn't mean it was a bad move. It just means that the baseball gods reared their heads and said, we're going to take control of this game, and Alvarez drove that ball to the right side.
You're a karma guy, aren't you? You believe in baseball gods. I think I've heard you say that before.
Oh, very much so. I think, you got to respect your teammates, you got to respect the game, and you got to respect your opponents. And any breach of that respect, and the baseball gods will slap you right back into place.
And so if you look at the teams and you look at the Pirates, are the Cardinals the team in the most trouble? Or is everybody who's down in this spot in the most trouble? Do you see them coming back, I guess, is my question.
Well, I wouldn't rule it out for the Cardinals. You know, they've been in this spot many, many times before. You know, their core group of veteran players has played in a lot of elimination games on the road. The real wild card is their starting pitcher today, Michael Wacha, a rookie. I think he's only got 10 major league starts under his belt. He's been very good in those 10 major league starts, but this environment that he's going to be pitching in here today is going to be unlike anything he's ever experienced before. Mike Matheny told us before the ball game he's got ultimate confidence in his right-hander. He thinks he's up for the task, but until you actually get out there on that bump and start throwing pitches, we won't know for sure.
Game is on TBS today. Bob Brenly will be in the booth. St. Louis and Pittsburgh, the Pirates trying to wrap it up. They have the lead in that series. Who's done the most impressive managerial job to you so far in the postseason? I know you're there in Pittsburgh today, but as you watch the other games, the manager that you think, boy, he's really getting the most out of his guys this point of the season.
Well, I think not only this point of the season, but throughout the regular season, I think John Farrell doesn't get the credit he deserves in Boston. I mean, that was a team that was just totally in shambles at the end of the season last year. And for him to come in there and in 1 year take them from, I think they might have lost 96 games last year, to the winningest team in the American League this year, and with relatively few changes to the roster. They got rid of some of the dead weight, some of the guys that were causing some of the controversy. But, John Farrell just quietly puts his team out there and puts them in a position to win ball games and instills confidence in his players and does it in a very quiet way that doesn't draw attention to himself. And I have a lot of respect for that guy.
It seems like, Bob, in watching Boston, I'm sitting there watching saying, how do you navigate through this lineup? Because you have players that will foul off pitch after pitch. They'll get the pitch counts up. You'll have guys that will take a couple of walks. It's not all about the Ortiz home runs, just navigating through the Red Sox lineup. Everybody talks about the Dodgers lineup. I'm looking at Boston saying that's really tough to get through.
Well, it's a little bit different because, like you said, the Red Sox will grind at bats.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, they want every at-bat to come down to a full count and four or five foul balls on the full count and then either take a walk or get a base hit. And obviously, that runs up a pitch count on your starter. You get into that bullpen a little earlier in the ball game, and the early relievers are the guys that you want to have out there on the mound if you're the Red Sox against them. I mean, they have a game plan. They stick to it. Apparently, it's an organization-wide thing that they teach their guys, even at the lowest levels of the minor league, that that's how you're expected to perform when you get to the big league, so you might as well learn how to do it right now.
Dodgers up 2-1 on that series. Does Atlanta have the ability to come back?
I don't think so. You know, for me, Atlanta was a flawed team to begin with, a very good regular season team because they had all those home run hitters that struck out, 150 times. And I'm sure they were a lot of fun to watch down in Atlanta this summer because they hit the ball out of the ballpark with regularity. But when you get into the postseason and you're facing the number one, two, and three pitchers in a rotation and the best relievers out of that bullpen, they're not as likely to make the mistakes to get hit out of the ballpark. So if you're a team that is heavily dependent on the home run ball like Atlanta is, this is not the time of year for you.
Of course, these whiny Dodger fans say that announcers in the booth are rooting for the Braves. You know, have you heard that nonsense, Bob? And, of course, you've been accused of that in the past, I would think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've done plenty of postseason series, and you go to one town and they say you're rooting for the other team, and you go to the other town, they say you're rooting for the other team. You know, you can't win that one. People hear what they want to hear. As always, at least I try to play it right down the middle. Just enjoy the ball game, and I don't really care who wins. I just want to see good, good baseball.
You will today. Safe travels. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you very much, Brad.
Always good catching up with Bob Brenly for a couple of minutes. Again, that game later today on TBS. He's in the middle of the best story in the postseason. Though watching the Dodgers last night, you watch the Dodgers and how they are behind early, and then they find a way to not just come back a little bit, but just pound Atlanta into submission. It was impressive. And then I feel good for Bob Melvin. Bob Melvin, the former Diamondback manager with the Oakland A's, getting it done too. They're a fun team to watch, Oakland. The segment of the Brad Sussmat Show is brought to you by the good people at Santan Ford. Santan Ford and Pros to Preps, a winning combination. They've been a part of what we've done over the last couple of years. This last weekend, Eric was down in Dallas. Santan Ford says, Brad, we believe in what you do and traveling and your vision of being at places a lot of people don't get to in the media. And so they're a big part of why we go places and why we go tell those great stories that are out there. It's not just at the pro level or the college level. It's even down to the high school level. Friday night, Jared was doing the Chandler-Hamilton game. Santan Ford sponsors our high school page. Appreciate their support throughout what we're doing here on pros2preps.com. Santan Ford, General Manager Tim Hovick and company, do it right. Santan Ford, that's the place to shop, guys, for the next car, the next truck. It's all about you. Jadeveon Clowney's on my radar today on the college football scene. Clowney is the number one defensive player in this coming NFL draft. And there was conversation over the summer about should he have stayed, should he have left. I was of the opinion, along with Johnny Manziel, those are guys who just get in their car, drive away, head off to some island, and then come back ready for the combine in January. What's Jadeveon Clowney going to do to help his stock? Well, obviously somebody has gotten to him and told him the exact same thing. Clowney told his coach, Steve Spurrier, right before kickoff, in the locker room, I'm not playing today. I got a rib injury. He missed the game against Kentucky because he had bone spurs and the flu. Why risk your top stock status in the NFL against Kentucky? Against UCF, he had the flu. He was limited by illness against North Carolina. Seems like he's limited quite a bit for the guy that's going to be the number one defensive player in the NFL draft. And then he said after the game on September 7th against Georgia, he wasn't happy with how he was being used in the game. So here's a college kid that's just going to sit there and do his thing, get through it. This is why when we hear student athlete, it's a joke. I think after the weekend, the Fiesta Bowl has to be pretty happy after this weekend. Baylor is averaging about, 500-600 yards a game. And every week they're throwing up big numbers. Baylor, Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl, how would that look? I don't know, it would look like 1,400 yards of offense. In the title game, Alabama, Clemson. Is it a given that Alabama is going to be in the national title game? I don't think it's a given. Now, of course, the Tide fans say, oh, we're going to roll right through everybody. And yeah, you don't have much left on your schedule. The Rose Bowl, Ohio State and Stanford right now. The Sugar, Texas A&M and Louisville. The Orange, Florida State and Oklahoma. I don't want Oklahoma to come back here. I've had Oklahoma here enough. If I can have Baylor and Oregon, be pretty happy. Be pretty happy on that one. Paula Bovin joins us next. News and notes also later in the show. So the president of Texas A&M committed a secondary NCAA infraction on Twitter. We'll tell you about that as we move on through the hour. Also, this is probably going to be the week some changes come on the Diamondbacks staff. Back over to the Cardinals. Condoleezza Rice, part of this committee to determine who's going to be in the national championship game. And there's people that say, I don't want a woman involved in that. So I got to talk to Paula Bovin about that. She also was in Dallas with Arizona State on Saturday night. Where do the Sun Devils go from here after a disappointing loss to the Irish? She is next. AZ Central Sports columnist Paula Bovin. I'm Brad Susmat. Pros 2 Preps.
Get all the latest Arizona sports news from the high schools to the pros. Follow us on Twitter at Pros 2 Preps. Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central Sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Susmat.
News and Notes with Paula Bovin every week, AZ Central Sports columnist and friend. She was in Dallas for ASU Notre Dame. I'll get into the Sun Devils, the future in a minute. I just have to ask off the top, I think you have a column in you on Condoleezza Rice being a part of this playoff and an ESPN commentator saying he doesn't want a woman. Just want somebody who doesn't watch football and live, eat, breathe, sleep football being a determining factor in this new national title game. Have you heard of this story,
Paula? Yeah, and it, you know, and then he tried to play it off by saying it's not about gender. No, it is about gender. If you're going to make that statement, it's about gender, and I found it very annoying.
Yeah, and so you don't have a column in you on it because you've heard this stuff before. Neanderthals, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You just, it just blows me away at this sort of day and age, still a rather young guy who made the comment would say something like that without thinking it would be sexist. It was ridiculous.
Doesn't he have any sort of point, though? I mean, I don't want anybody...
No. Go ahead.
No, the thing is, Paula, I don't want anybody, just anybody being put on that committee.
And, right.
And so my understanding is, I don't care, guy, girl, I don't care. If they know what they're talking about, and Condoleezza Rice, from everybody that I've read, I've never talked to her about football, but
right.
everybody I've read, she knows football inside and out.
Right.
If he said, this female, and you're like, that person has no credibility, that person has no idea, and same thing with a guy. I mean, some of these people that they're talking about, they're going to be on this committee, I think are all very, very good. Mike Trangisi, Ty Willingham,
right.
Oliver Luck, Archie Manning, Tom Osborne, Condoleezza Rice. I think it all flows together. But my point is, he just misspoke towards that person.
Right, right. And absolutely, you want people who, you know, embrace the sport, know the sport, have some kind of a connection to the sport. But I think the way he presented it and said it, I mean, you have to be careful
sure.
about that stuff. It's still, there are still people who are going to, you know, be back there saying, yeah, you know, a woman shouldn't be doing that. I don't think he got his message out correctly at all. And that's where the problem is, I think.
I agree. And watching it, it felt like he said what he said and didn't realize, okay, you're going to get hammered now.
Right.
This. And it'd be the same thing if today it came out that Brad Susmat was on this committee. It would be like, what does he do other than sit behind a microphone and tell stories and maybe follow college football? You know, my point is, it doesn't matter, guy or girl, there's got to be some credibility there. And he just didn't know her credentials, I think.
I would agree. And if you were put on the committee, I would have ripped you hard.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And I would expect you to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of getting ripped hard, Richard Smith. So I've just about run my course, and I don't run kids off of programs, but there
right.
has to be somebody else that ASU can look at and say, we need to develop somebody opposite Jalen Strong and somebody other than Chris to throw to other than Chris Coyle and Jalen Strong. Richard Smith has had 2 years. I thought his fumble against Notre Dame was the absolute backbreaker.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, you know, at some point you just have to decide that this isn't working out and it's costing the team. And, you know, that's what good, strong programs do. They evaluate what they've put on the field, and then they have the depth and the, you know, intelligence to make those kind of changes. And that's how programs succeed, because they can keep reloading. And that's just something ASU has to look at now.
No, they have to. They have to look at him.
Right.
I'm being very specific here. As you were down there in the locker room after the game, did they feel like it was a winnable game for them?
Did ASU feel like it?
Yeah.
Well, ASU, I think, before and after, felt like it was a winnable game. The thing that threw me a little bit was some of the comments afterward by some players saying they seemed surprised at some of the things Notre Dame came out with. I mean, you know, one thing I've always thought with this coaching staff is that they prepare these guys well, and I think they have most of the time. So that kind of surprised me a little bit. But, you know, I don't think there's any issue with this team sort of not buying into the coaching staff anymore. I've seen it many, many times in past ASU coaching administrations where you feel like, oh, they've lost those guys. I don't think that's the case at all. But I do think ASU, and I sound a little bit like a broken record, but I really thought a lot of what happened this past game is the same thing we saw at Stanford.
Yeah.
ASU does not have those big linemen, both sides of the ball in the trenches, to make the difference that, like, these elite programs have. I mean, Notre Dame has 3 to 4 guys who are going to be drafted, three or four linemen who are going to be drafted, and several of them in the first and second round. So I think that ultimately cost ASU.
News and notes, Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. I wasn't implying that they didn't believe before the game, but after the game,
right?
It was like, is there really that big of a gap between a team that was unranked coming in? Tommy Rees didn't look like turnover Tommy Rees.
No. Nope.
The defensive front has been the same issue the last 3 weeks. It's Will Sutton, and then you just hope and pray without Jackson Hood out there.
Right.
That you know, Jake Sheffields and those guys, nice people, nice stories, not getting it done.
No, not at all.
So now they have Colorado in what I've termed the ultimate trap game. Colorado's not good. Nobody's expecting ASU to struggle at all with Colorado. They have Washington the following week, ASU does, at home.
Right.
They just finished 4 weeks of brutal week after week, big game, big game, big game. This is about the time where you take a big breath and all of a sudden you find yourself in a dogfight. Do you anticipate that this weekend?
No, I totally think that they're going to blow them out, and I'll tell you why. I just think that this brutal schedule and these opponents has just made ASU a better team. I mean, I think that they're realizing what they're dealing with. I think they're going to realize Colorado's a step down, and I think they're going to
cruise
to a victory. Yeah, quite a few steps down. I don't think at all there's going to be a letdown with this game.
Okay, I've seen this picture before, though, with
right.
ASU.
I know.
This is one of those games where you need to just show up and put them away early.
Right.
It will tell me a lot about Todd Graham if he's able to do that with this team.
Well, I would agree. I mean, you know, in that sense, I'll agree. I mean, it's going to be on Graham and whether these guys are going to hear the right message about being prepared. I don't think that's a problem with this staff, and I think they're going to have no problem on Saturday.
What did you make out of the whole atmosphere, ambiance, amount of fans that attended down there for ASU football? Are they back, or was this just the place to be for people to show up and say that they were there?
No. Yeah. Are you talking about ASU fans?
Yeah, yeah.
I talked to a ton of them, especially after the game, because I was scrambling to get out of there, and we were all waiting in the same cab line. There is a much greater sort of warmth and appreciation for this staff, even after the loss, than I've heard in a long time. And a lot of people were, you know, disappointed in the victory, but I didn't see them saying, oh, I'm not going to a game again. I thought the turnout was impressive. I didn't, you know, again, they were allotted only a certain amount of tickets, but I thought there was really good ASU representation. People I talked to came from all around the country to go to the game. Many, mm-hmm. many from Arizona were there. Mm-hmm. And I still think there's a strong belief in this program. Now, I know that there's that same old feeling after that loss, but I think there's much better support than I would have imagined after that kind of a defeat.
So if that's the case, there should be more than 55,000 for Saturday's game against Colorado, even though it's Colorado. Wouldn't we agree on that? I mean, if they're really making progress, this should be now north of 60 with what they've got, in my opinion.
I would agree. And it's a matter of, you know, I think this is going to be very telling, maybe even more from the team. For the fans, you know, are they going to be out there? It should be a little bit better weather. I think there's going to be good support. And if there's not, I mean, then it proves my point that I'm wrong with the support stuff. But I think they're there.
News and notes, Paula Bovinese, Central Sports. Are you ready to take Carson Palmer and put Drew Stanton in at quarterback, as some fans are wanting to do?
No, not at all. You know, the interceptions are horrible, but it just strikes me that he's a guy who, you know, early on this season, he was beat up pretty bad, and I feel like he's feeling right now he can't go through his reads and be as sharp as he used to, and he's got to fix that problem. But, you know, there are enough plays, and you've seen this, Brad, with him, where he makes some great passes during these games, and you go, ah, that's what we've been missing for years, a guy who can hit that long pass. Well, so, no, I don't think they should change at all.
And I think that it's something to sit behind a microphone and fill some time and,
right.
and get to the next commercial and do my live endorsement and then take a check and go home. I think that the media side of it, it's laughable to me. It's as though that nobody saw what Derek Anderson or John Skelton or all these other guys the last few years. And, hey, they're 3-2 with the 49ers on Sunday and Seattle a week from Thursday. So in a span of the next 11 days, we're going to know if they're right in the middle of this at the midpoint of the season. Paul, I don't think people gave them a shot to be sitting there at that stage.
No, and I don't think anyone imagined that this defense would be as opportunistic as it was. I mean, that's been impressive, and it gets tough. You've got four games. I think all of these teams were playoff teams last year. It's not going to be easy by any stretch, but, you know, you build confidence each game. Having Washington back in the lineup was, I thought, huge. You could just sort of see the difference in the defense. And, you know, Carson Palmer's been around long enough to sort of be able to rebound from what happened in this game. And, you know, again, I think as long as the line is going to give him a little bit of time in these next four meetings, they should be competitive at the very least.
There's some things that are interesting to me. There are a couple camera shots, and I know that the NFL doesn't like to show heated exchanges on the sidelines. They don't like to show empty seats in the stadium, so they shoot low. That's all part of their partnership. I get it.
Right.
But I saw Fitz a couple of quick shots where he wasn't happy. Didn't sound like he was happy after the game. I see Darrell Washington back on the field, and there's still some stuff hanging over his head in the next off season. There's some storylines around this team on and off the field that are starting to intrigue me a little bit. Washington's renaissance yesterday was terrific, but do you feel like Fitz is starting to look around and say, man, my window's closing fast, and here's another year where I'm just not getting the ball as much as I need to?
I mean, there's definitely a story there. I mean, there's the one, you know, how they've chosen to use him this season is one storyline. And I know he was excited for Palmer because Palmer's a guy who can get him the ball. And so there's clearly frustration there. But, I mean, what is he going to do? What, other than sulk, which I don't think, other than maybe a subtle thing you might see on the sidelines, I don't think you're going to see Fitz go off on this team. And he's got a big contract, and he's kind of locked in, so... You know, I don't know where Fitz takes it beyond this, other than kind of hoping some of these problems get resolved.
And he's never going to open up about it.
No.
That's just, if anybody wants to know what really is going on, it's going to come out through some national deal, because that's how he operates.
Right.
On the Darrell Washington end, are you uncomfortable that he still has something hanging over his head from the domestic violence thing?
That whole issue is always a problem for me, because you feel like you want to know the real story, but we also sort of have to wait until justice is, you know, the process is done and they go
sure.
through that. So, you know, I don't think it's a time to judge. If something comes out afterwards, certainly it's a time to judge. But right now, we're following the rules of the law and the football laws. You know, he had a suspension for certain things, and then, you know, this other issue is going to come up, and we're just going to have to see.
He was terrific yesterday. I mean, he was as good as Dansby's. I think having Dansby back on this team and Abraham on this team and having Washington there, there's some better vet guys, I mean Dansby and Abraham, than there have been the last few years at linebacker.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. And just well, that whole defense, I just was reading that story about how Peterson went, to, I think, to Calais Campbell and said, you got to get back out on the field. I know you're taking a break, but we need you, you know? And he made a big play, so.
Yeah, and he's not had a big season to this point. He just hasn't.
Not at all.
Anything else you're working on?
Excuse me, Brad. I'm going to actually kind of explore Carson Palmer this week and just kind of see where his head's at and maybe enter this fit storyline into it a little bit, too.
Ah, I like that. I like that. Stay well. Appreciate the time.
All right, thanks.
It's Paula Bova, News and Notes every week. Appreciate her being with us. On the other side, so this, I love how infractions come up in the NCAA. This president at Texas A&M, who's already gone through Johnny Manziel, decided to take to Twitter to communicate with a recruit. Now, I don't know. Isn't it like just known you don't go to Twitter and say, hey, nice meeting you? These guys are supposed to be presidents, like brain surgeons. This is a Texas A&M, and they're in trouble today over this. And some other things on my mind as well as we roll on. Jared Cohen from Pros to Preps was at a story Friday night that has never happened in Arizona that people are buzzing about today. I'll have that too as we roll on. Brad Susmat with you, the Brad Susmat Show on Pros to Preps.
College football fans, check out the recruiting roundup with Jared Cohen and Scout.com insider Jason Jewell on ProsToPreps.com.
Sad to hear about Kurt Schilling, his estate sales going on. Kurt lost everything. I mean everything. He had to auction off his bloody sock. When you're on top, and then you go all the way down to the bottom, and then you try to work your way back up. Kurt had a heart attack, too. That's some tough stuff. This Saturday in Medfield, Massachusetts, household items owned by Kurt Schilling, who turned video game entrepreneur, and his wife, Shauna Schilling, are going up for public inspection and auction. ConsignWorks has posted photos of a wide array of mundane items, sports memorabilia to furniture. His furniture is being auctioned off to try to cover debt. The Schilling's home in Massachusetts went on the market for $3 million. His 38 Studios game developing company failed spectacularly last year, leaving the state of Rhode Island on the hook for $75 million in loans the state had guaranteed for the young company to secure its move there. The bloody sock went for $92,000. The stock was listed as collateral for $50 million of the 38 Studios loans. Jeez. And so Schilling's right in the middle of some tough stuff. Some people didn't like Kurt Schilling when he was here in Arizona. I liked Kurt Schilling. Kurt Schilling and I had blowups, not a problem. Kurt Schilling was always there. I saw Kurt down at the winter meetings last December. And he came over and gave me a big hug and said he'd come on the show and I could never find him again. You know, it's one of those things where, and I have no problems with that. I have no problems with that. Guys will say, yeah, I'll do something, and they don't. And he's in the middle of the hurricane. And he knows if he's going to come on a show, then I'm going to say, so what happened? I'm not going to sit there and pretend it didn't. This Texas A&M president, R. Bowen Lofton, inadvertently committed a secondary NCAA infraction. Guys, if you wonder where the NCAA is, they're everywhere. They're those cameras in the parking lots at stadiums, so to speak. I've been hearing that story here locally here the last week or so. This president of the university sent a post on his Twitter account to a top recruit who just visited Aggieland, this according to the Bryn College Station Eagle. Now, am I thinking right that there was somebody from, I don't know, Arkansas or Alabama said, that's a violation. That's a violation right there. You cannot talk to that young man. Now, according to the article, June 14th, this president of Texas A&M, he's known not just for his colorful bow ties, but also student engagement. He's active on social media. He enjoyed meeting, he sent out a tweet, an innocuous message, quote, enjoyed meeting you yesterday during your visit to Texas A&M. This is what he sent out to his 26,640 followers on Twitter. Target of the tweet was a 16-year-old. 16-year-old Jordan Davis, 6'4", 250-pound tight end. Clear Lake tweeted back to the president. I wonder if that's a violation. Yes, sir. It was a nice meeting you, Giggum. #Giggum. Davis visited College Station June 13th, committed to A&M that same day. So he'd given them a verbal, okay? And I think this is crucial here. This is where we're at in social media. He'd given the school a verbal, and the president of the university can't send him a note to say, enjoyed meeting you yesterday during your visit to Texas A&M. Now, I don't know, are we getting away from just common manners? If you visit somebody and then you say, you know, I want to go here all the time. I'm coming. Gets a verbal. And then the president sends that out. How's that a violation? I mean, it's just, I'm sitting here wasting time on a show trying to put this together, trying to put myself in the NCAA's room of violations. What do we have here? Let's see. Well, we got a kid getting money here. We got a check being given here. We got a UPS envelope here. Girl with a car wash in San Diego. Oh, here we go. Let's see. Kid gives verbal, president of the university. Blah, 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 blah. Here it is right here. He sent him a tweet. Sent him a tweet. Fine him. Do whatever. Throw him in Twitter jail. A&M's compliance director, David Batson, told the paper that Lofton simply didn't know the NCAA guideline in this instance, and according to the article, the self-imposed action. So the A&M folks have decided to sanction themselves on this. I don't know. Are they going to take away his phone for a week? You can't tweet for a week. Hey, Mr. President, you screwed up. The self-imposed action by A&M, which was reported in July to the SEC. So we have to call Mike Slive at the SEC. Hey, Mike, I know you're trying to work on big deals for a national title game. I know you're trying to work on moving your conference forward, but we got a problem. Well, what's that? The president at A&M sent out a tweet to a kid who committed. The kid's 16. So this is what it comes to, guys. When you're wondering about the NCAA and all the things that take place and why it's so far behind the times. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. Jared Cullen, Pros to Preps, on Friday. And one other story, too. Jared on Friday night. And this weekend, Blue Ridge plays Sholo this Friday. One of the best rivalries in the state of Arizona on the high school level. We do the pros, and we do the college, and we do the high school. This Friday night, it's Blue Ridge, Sholo. The game's at Sholo. The Cougs and Blue Ridge are getting after one another. Jared was at Chandler against Hamilton. We formed a partnership with the Chandler Unified School District. We've had other school districts that have said, hey, how can we get involved in this? We put their games up. The students do the play-by-play. Away we go. It's good. It's a good time. So Jared's doing Chandler-Hamilton. Chandler hasn't beaten Hamilton ever. 0-17. I don't know the Blue Ridge Sholo record, but 0-17 is not good when two of the biggest programs in the state. And so you come in here today, and you're like on cloud nine, like you were able to do something that had never been done before.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I got to call the game. The Chandler students are nice enough to let me come to the school and sit in the chair and hold a microphone, and they do all the hard work, and it was an unbelievable game. Yeah. It was really well-played game, and it was a lot of fun. I'll never forget being a part of it.
So Friday, so let me put it in context. Friday night, you just were at a little stadium with about 10,000 fans, and they were hooping the holler and taking their shirts off and throwing stuff around.
It was a great environment. Okay. It was as good of an environment in sports as you'll see, and it was a high school football game. Steve Bellis picked up the coach at Hamilton picked up a flag in the third, maybe beginning of the fourth quarter for talking to the refs. Don't know what was said, don't know what happened, but it was an extra penalty. And the Chandler fans were just going nuts. They were just hollering at him. It was just a great environment. Like, no, it's not technically a rivalry because of how many games Hamilton has won compared to Chandler.
Right.
It's a rivalry to the sense of these schools are right down the street from each other. A lot of these kids grew up together. A lot of these kids...
I understand all that, but the point I want to get to is, so you had this environment on Friday night. Yesterday, you were at the Cardinals and Carolina game. It's an NFL game. Was the environment as crazy?
No.
And
but the game was not comparable.
Sure, it's pros. It's pro football. But we get that.
If you had a game-winning touchdown at the end of the game in the Cardinals game, it would have been just as good, if not a better an environment because of how many more people were there.
But the point of it is fans on Friday night, just like Saturday night down at Notre Dame and ASU saw a great game, just like yesterday, while it wasn't aesthetically pretty, the point is through the weekend, if you go to a high school game, you go to a college game, you're going to see all this stuff. And I actually listened to the end of Jared's deal. I got home, and I flipped it on, and Jared was as excited for that as anything he's done with the Suns, anything he's done with the Coyotes, anything he's done with the Diamondbacks. It was just two little towns getting, or one town, two little high schools getting after each other. It's good stuff there.
Appreciate the opportunity.
You got it, man. we're all about here. It's Pros Two Preps. You can always find us. You can actually check out that game and other stuff on our high school page, pros2preps.com. Our college page, where Eric was down with ASU and Notre Dame. And the pros were, Jared yesterday was with the Cardinals in their game too. Pros Two Preps. And of course, I'm on Twitter at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. White Mountain Radio, appreciate the good people. White Mountain Radio, busy Monday, a lot going on in the world of sports.